Support the Bartholomew Town Podcast by subscribing, rating, and reviewing on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down with the proprietors of Providence's Weenie Wizard. You each have such an interesting lens into Providence. The different types of people that must come up to your stand on an event by event basis. Do you experience that? And do you feel like there's, am I crazy in thinking that?
No.
I think you've actually hit it on the head.
Yeah. We were definitely talking about this the other day where hot dogs almost give us a leg up because everyone can come to it and enjoy it. And, you know, it has this familiarity. But that familiarity we can also use as a vehicle to play with a lot of different flavors.
Weenie Wizard is a Providence-based artisanal hot dog stand that offers a constantly shifting array of meat, veggie, and carrot dogs with highly original and creative toppings. Formed by Michelle Fryer and Luke Tabor, a.k.a. the Fantastical Food Group, the Meat Magicians, as they are known, have expanded from speakeasy-esque DIY origins in 2014 to a fully licensed food provider today, serving their signature dogs and even partnering on a new bar far west. Not a food truck nor a brick-and-mortar restaurant, Weenie Wizard's innovative approach to food production borrows from guerrilla-to-mainstream conversion tactics followed by many other forms of art and politicians. In transacting hot dogs, the Wizards have a unique vantage point from which to observe and understand the wide array of patrons that frequent their operation. By the way, head over to Instagram at Bartholomew Town Podcast or search Bartholomew Town on YouTube for a thrilling video of me trying out four different veggie dogs from the Weenie Wizard. You don't want to miss this. Bartholomew Town Podcast on the gram or search YouTube Bartholomew Town. Support for the Bartholomew Town Podcast comes from M. Duran Studio, Providence's finest choice for commercial photography. From headshots and portraits to high-quality candidates, check out their extensive portfolio at mduranstudio.com. Give them a call today at 401-400-2328 or message book at mduranstudio.com. And coming up on Saturday, June 8th, it's Bartholomew Town Live at PVD Fest, a live variety show and podcast featuring some of your favorite Rhode Island influencers and performing artists. Full details at pvdfest.com and stay with me on Twitter at Bill Bartholomew for all of the latest and greatest details. All right, without further ado, let's take you to my conversation with the Weenie Wizards. All right, so we are here with the Meat Magicians, and I must say, as a committed multi-decade vegetarian, the non-meat magicians as well, because I literally walk away from, have walked away from the Weenie Wizard kiosk and turn around and come right on back for more. So let's talk about Weenie Wizard. I'm fascinated by it because, number one, it's great. It's delicious. It's it's an artisan food out of something basic, which is, I know that's a strategy in even Michelin striving restaurants now, is to really like go back to basics and
agreed,
and then make that damn good and special. Mm-hmm. But it's also an interesting thing in Providence because when you began, you weren't certainly not a brick and mortar restaurant, mm-hmm, nor a food truck.
No,
we're at Del's Lemonade Stand.
No.
Talk about that.
Yeah, you can't really put, I guess, pinpoint what we were and I guess what we still are. We were kind of a secret pop-up. We started actually as a yard sale, posing as a yard sale. So we lived on the west side near North, and we just had tons of stuff to get rid of. I bought Luke this hot dog cart as a surprise for his birthday, and we were like, let's have a yard sale and sell dollar hot dogs. So we posted the whole west side with yard sale signs, and they were really artsy and cool. And we were like, surprise, there's hot dogs for sale when people got there. A lot of people are probably like, what is this?
Like,
what
did I walk into?
Yeah. Oh, there was weird stuff, too. People handed us, like, yard sale stuff, like Beanie Babies. Like, we were selling weird stuff.
Some sweet black velvet paintings, I remember.
Yeah, black velvet. There's some good stuff, too. But anyway, so the hot dogs. So we started so cheap. You know, just try it out. So then we further progressed every other Sunday, like to keep doing this yard sale until the junk like ran out. We upped the price like by a dollar as we got more legit. And we started putting out blasts on Instagram. I think every other Sunday we just grew a little bit more. We started having fresh linens. We bought more tables. And before we knew it, our backyard was like a full-blown restaurant.
Yeah, very hidden. I remember when you started putting out flowers, and it was really activated the space really well. Mm. And people would – I always loved when people would walk back kind of down the shady, you know, driveway, not knowing what to expect, and they'd walk in, and there'd be all these, like, tables with flowers on it and music pumping and – people bringing their own like beers and, you know, having some hot dogs. And it was just a really, really good vibe.
Yeah. So it kept progressing. And then we got this blow up alien that we'd hang up on the tree outside of our house so that people in the know would be like, where's that alien? Like, let's go down that weird driveway. And let me just say, it was a typical Providence triple decker vinyl siding, like falling up apart, really, with like you have to walk by all these trash cans and you couldn't see what actually was in the yard when you walked down. Anyway, so that's how we started, and people just started loving it. By the end, we just started having lines down our driveway. So we're like, okay, what do we do? Like, we have to turn this legit if we're gonna keep doing it, because it's getting scary how popular it was. It was cool. Still to this day, we have a lot of loyal customers, I'd say, Luke. Like,
yeah, from that time.
A lot of our customers are from that time, and everyone reminisces, like, we miss your backyard. So, we try to bring that spirit in any little way we can with, like, DIY marketing stuff or bright colors or, I don't know, like, Ape and Bird makes all of our cool hats, which is really fun. So we try to have this, like, down-to-earth, like, punky artistic DIY flair, no matter how like legit we are. Like,
I totally admire that pathway. That's very similar to kind of the approach I'm taking right here with this podcast, to be honest with you. It's just like, boom, let's do it.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah,
you know?
And never let go of that ethos as well. Like you say, totally. That punk ethos, which is something from music and art that we learn, history and all those areas. All right, so now we're, you know, you're a bit more legit these days, I suppose.
Yeah, very legit.
Yeah.
So talk about that process, I guess, Luke, if you
could. Yeah, so it turned out that, you know, in order to sell food to the public, you need a lot of licenses. Huh. And you need to, you know, find a kitchen that you can cook legally out of, which we were prepared to do. We had to get our food safety manager, find a kitchen where we could work out of. Yeah, so it took us probably about 6 months to, once we decided that that's really, that we want to be a legit business and we wanted to be out there and get some of the bigger events, you know, like PVD Fest or we did Foo like Fest. Foo Fest, all these events where, you know, you can really, you know, make some money and really represent yourself and be part of the street event in a way that feels like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of licenses, you know, and it took us a while because every time I feel like you thought you were all set, somebody would come up with something else that you were missing or they didn't fill out quite accurately. And so it was frustrating for a while because there's nobody that you can just sit down with, unfortunately, and be like, just give me a list of everything I need and check it off. Instead, you're kind of chasing your own tail for a while, trying to figure out, you know, how this leads to that. And so,
right. So you basically are operating as a caterer then. Is that, I'm guessing, is that,
yeah, it's a mobile food license is the classification. And there's a few different ones within there. Like as food truck to like a hot dog cart. We were kind of in the middle because some of our cooking's a little bit more advanced than your typical hot dog cart. So that made things slightly more complicated. But it's basically to make sure that you have the ability to serve safe food temperature wise and sanitary wise. And, you know, we're doing the same thing in our backyard, but you just have to make sure that you demonstrate it on paper.
And that goes through the DBR, Liz Tanner, and the Department of Business Regulation.
Actually, no, it's like food safety. Mm-hmm. It's a whole nother department.
Wow. Department of Health.
Department of Health, yeah.
Department of Health, of course, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then like the license department. I forget what their name is, but
just the city.
Yeah, yeah, city hall. So lots of time in city hall trying to figure out, you know, make sure that you're all straight with the man.
Yeah, but once you've got that in order, it's freeing, right, in a certain way. You know, now you can operate. Of course, you have to maintain, but at the
same
time,
it's a lot easier to renew licenses than it is to, like, find out how to do it from scratch, for sure. And it's cool. We actually have a lot of people locally, friends in the industry that are interested in starting their own food businesses. So now we can kind of help perpetuate, you know, people doing that by giving them our advice of what we went through. So it's kind of cool.
The way that, you know, someone I was talking with yesterday talking about the self-driving cars and how real time educate each other about, oh, this intersection is dangerous. If you know, you might go over the curb if you get too close to it, or there's a traffic jam here, whatever the situation is, you know, food, whatever, music, technology, whatever it is, you know, if we can operate in that same format, we can just get better and better and better and tighter and tighter as a unit. But someone's got to, as they say in comedy, take bullet and get out first. Mm-hmm. Like, that's Weenie Wizard.
Yeah. That's us.
Innovators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially with vending, where I feel like it's such a unique thing of, you show up at this event, you don't know quite how many people there are going to be. You don't know what kind of guests you're going to get. You don't know, you have to set all the prices. You have to make the whole menu. And so you face a lot of unique circumstances, because every time you pop up, it could be totally different, you know, weather, crowds. And so, like, just keeping an even keel has been one of the tougher things of, like, trying to figure out how to, you know, keep us straight and narrow. And, you know,
there's some highs and there's some lows. Yeah. For sure. It's all worth it in the end, though.
Definitely. Let's talk about Providence right now, just in general. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, someone asked me this morning, you know, oh, do you see yourself being here? Or what do you see as the future of Providence? And I've been thinking the last few weeks, kind of putting together a lot of the conversations I've had with different people and using, you know, just our own friends or whatever. It's got to be like a 25-year plan for this to really work and really get going the way we want. Although there are things today that are basically the same as what we would want in the future to kind of make those corrections. Is that too long, too dark a view, or is that you know, not long enough? What do you think? You're on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we think about a lot, about, you know, wanting to invest in this community and create a small business and really make sure that it's a place that we can be successful and receptive to our ideas. And it's amazing seeing so many creative people out in the streets that are, you know, responding to us, doing their own thing, really, you know, coming up with all these unique things. But it does seem like it's still going to take a while, you know, and it's, I think probably on a larger level of a city level of really investing in the creative small business capital that I feel like, has been ignored sometimes for some larger projects that don't always trickle down.
Completely. I feel like there tends to be a lot of, talk about the creative capital, but there needs to be some more obvious steps towards bringing that to fruition. We see communities around Providence thriving kind of faster than we are. And there's some major core fundamentals that I think have to be changed to kind of bring us up to speed. I mean, from our point of view, like the food scope, like if you think of some other towns around the country that are the same kind of vibe as us, like if you think of Austin, Texas, or like just some other kind of artsy places, they have like kind of food truck areas and there's less of a barrier to entry to like kind of have this gathering space. And that can go with like art, music, food, whatever. Just like not having so much red tape around, like just like letting there be some grandfathered in like just gathering places for art, for music, just kind of subsidized, like just, I don't know. There's a lot of old laws in place that I just feel like there, like there needs to be someone more like that has this innovative spirit, like tearing down some of this red tape. Also, you know, RISD, they're doing like, you know, they put out such great work, but like some of those high-end universities, RISD and Brown, like there needs to be more collaboration. Like, why are those students going to school for city planning not doing projects in real time in this town? And like RISD, there's great like designers. Why can't they design some like dope playgrounds for kids, or like turn some of these empty lots in Providence and dilapidated properties into like a school project, and put those kind of tax dollars that they're saving back into the community? I think that there's a lot of things, small changes like that, that could be done, like just to kind of help us get up to speed with all of our neighbors and be the creative capital that we are supposed to be.
I completely agree. That communication between institutions, between stakeholders in the city, you know, not naming names, but just getting that more fluid, that could just grease the wheels and ease up a lot of issues from the management of Kennedy Plaza to the process of opening up, you know, a food business such as yours. I mean, those things could probably be in reality, like you say, with a new vision. It's almost a conservative way of thinking about government. And it's a healthy version of that, in my opinion. It's just like, how can we go in, you know, yeah, you're going to take away revenue, but at the same time, how can we stimulate the economy to make that revenue back and then some?
100%. Yeah, I think I've heard of some other cities having automated, like, online. Say you are someone like us that you want to open a hot dog cart. You can go to a website, ideally, that would have the list of, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here are the live links to get this done. Just a little bit more hand-holding there and, like, clarity, because there is a lot of information that is kind of getting misfired from every direction.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's interesting. A lot of people, and look, Pawtucket's got some issues right now. We know that for sure. But hey, they've actually got their restaurant application system online where you can basically have zero trips to City Hall. It's all online, maybe one at the end instead of 10 trips before they ran the lean system on it. So it can be done here, but it's, again, it's about everybody getting on board, I think. That's the big thing.
Totally.
And, yeah, there's the great divide in Providence. Man, everybody loves hot dogs. Like, literally, that's one of the, like, music. Like, it's not just food. Like, everyone loves food, but your background informs your approach, whether or not something's exotic or home-based or quick. Or But I feel like you each have such an interesting lens into Providence. The different types of people that must come up to your stand on an event by event basis. Do you experience that? And do you feel like there's, am I crazy in thinking
that? No.
I think you've actually hit it on the head. Yeah.
We were definitely talking about this the other day where hot dogs almost give us a leg up because everyone can come to it and enjoy it. And, you know, it has this familiarity, but that familiarity we can also use as a vehicle to play with a lot of different flavors and, you know, different exotic things. And, you know, from a little kid to, you know, an 80-year-old man who's looking for his, you know, old style wiener, you know, it can
there's a lot of wiener jokes or whatever. Yeah.
So it definitely can be very cross-cultural, cross, you know, any age.
Then obviously, as you know, as a vegetarian as well, we have veggie dogs and carrot dogs. So we just did an event downtown within Down City Saturday. They took the former Taco Fest and turned it into the Rock Garden Party. And it was a great event. And that got Luke and I talking about how our clientele is so diverse. So you see a child wanting a, you know, plain hot dog, and then someone's like, oh, I love banh mi, I have banh mi toppings. And everyone has a connection, and you really do see everyone, all different socioeconomic levels. And that's another thing we keep in mind, is that we try to have our price point be low enough too, that like anyone can come off the street and be like nourished by this. So we can kind of fill the blank for whatever your experience you're looking for. We have fun kind of like branding too, like a unicorn with a hot dog as a horn is one of our logos. So I have people in line just buying bumper stickers too. So it's like, Weenie Wizard's here for you. Do you want to like just fill that hole and get full? Or do you want this like crazy weenie experience? Or do you just want a unicorn bumper sticker? Like, we got you.
It's magical. The meat magicians.
Yeah, definitely.
What's next? What are the next steps? I know there's a lot in the works.
Yeah. So we're opening up a bar with some partners on the west side, the west end, right off Elmwood down the street from here, actually. So we won't have our weenies there, but they will be doing pop-up appearances. I'll let Luke talk a little bit more about that because he's kind of mixology expert.
So we got an opportunity to open up a bar and learn kind of that process. And then hopefully, you know, we just want to get our brand out there more. You know, we look at ourselves as, you know, Weenie Wizard is just part of what we want to do. And eventually, you know, we'd like to have maybe some more established brick and mortar situations that are part of our identity and brand as the Fantastical Food Group. And
yeah, that's our LLC name.
Yeah. And hopefully we can take all these experiences and put something that is unique and creative and really fitting in the city of Providence.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
Yeah. The overall goal, I think, will be to have several sort of, we love the experience. That's how we got started, was like, come to this weird backyard and you're going to get a heck of an experience. So we want to bring these interactive kind of like homey feeling experiences across the board in different concepts. And then we'll always have Weenie Wizard. It will always be like our cart that can appear places, but it will be nice to kind of spread our wings. And yeah, but it was our soul. Like, it really started with Weenie Wizard. Just, yeah. It all started with the cart.
it makes perfect sense. last question. So you mentioned you have partners on the bar. What kind of relationship, if any, do you have with real estate and property owners in the city? I'm always wondering about that. You know, like, whether it's the big names, you know, your Buff Chase, Joe Paolino. I know Paolino and Nick's on Westminster. There's some partnerships there. So you see interesting economic stimulation happening by building owners and managers. Is that something you think about at all? Or
oh yeah, all the time. And it's definitely a learning process, you know, and it's a dynamic that I feel like you could just have to approach it where you're hopefully bringing something to the table that they appreciate, and they see that, and that, you know, you're both getting out of the deal what you want. And luckily, you know, our partners are really, they have a really good sensibility, and they're really looking to pay homage in history to the building we're in. And they're not just all about the money, you know, which I think is important. You know, it's not so much about the bottom line. And there's always going to be interesting aspects to the relationship that, you know, you maybe weren't expecting, or you weren't like, didn't really consider, that'll pop up but at the same time, these things cost money, you know, and it's, you know, we're not all born millionaires, but, you know, it's a, I don't know if you
know
that.
We're actually, so the partners for our bar are the building owners that the bar is in. And it's cool because, so they have this huge mill. It used to be a jewelry factory and then a rubber factory before then. Since they opened the space, they put a commercial kitchen in it, and a company called Pilot Works used to be out of that kitchen. Now Need Donuts took it over. But the building owners have always made sure that like the community gets to use that kitchen. So he could have, I know for a fact that there were offers on the space for something that would maybe generate more income, but it would be exclusive. So I think the goal is they've always wanted this space to be accessible by the public and kind of to stimulate this small food economy. And I'd like to think in the same way with us partnering with them, that having them, you know, we'll bring our sensibility to that bar, and they're giving us a chance, which in turn helps stimulate the kind of small business and food economy. So yeah, it'd be nice if every person that owned property kind of made that like a stipulation.
Well,
for sure.
I saw it, you know, I think it's an underappreciated relationship, you know, owner, building owner or manager based on the situation to, you know, tenant in a small business or creative capacity. That partnership can forge the foundation for cities or neighborhoods. I experienced that in New York, where I was able to open up a venue where we lived in the back of it, had band practice spaces, DIY venue, I should say. once it got real, we got out. But we would never have been able to do it if it weren't for the partner that we had in this building owner. He just had a dilapidated building in an area that was essentially a drug den, cars on fire. Now, good luck if, I mean, you're talking about $7,000 a month for a loft in this neighborhood. So I wonder how much of that could happen in Providence, where it's really like one-on-one, like, this guy owns a building, these people, this guy, this girl, whoever owns a building, and these people have an idea, let's make it happen, and then boom, that neighborhood explodes. But of course, there's the gentrification concern, but you know, you have to temper that with bringing the communities into these projects, of course. You know,
100%. And that takes time. I worked for Pilotworks actually when it was there. And I did see a lot of the forefront of the gentrification issue of surrounding neighbors in that space. And it's something to be sensitive to. Of course, we like had a lot of our written material translated in Spanish and some other languages. We tried to take, like, we had open houses. Like, we tried to let people know this may look new and very scary, and we don't, no one wants to take over space. We hope it does not like hike your rent prices, especially given the commercial kitchen being in there. I tried to let people know that, in fact, this was a good thing for the community, where like there's a pretty low barrier of entry to like start your own food business, and like that can, you don't have to be high income to afford that. Like, we certainly aren't in the high income bracket. So and it, already it's gotten better. So I think, you know, it takes time, and that's the problem with neighborhood evolution is there are those two sides, and we have to find a way to have harmony, I guess, between the two views.
Right. I agree. And it's the best operated in an organic fashion, I think, you know.
Totally.
While, yes, meetings are important and this things of that nature, it's better off. You just, you know, you walk into a restaurant and, for me, hack my way through Spanish to order, you know, figure out what's vegetarian and what's not in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then by 6 months later, that's a high five and you can actually speak to, you know, with each other.
Yeah.
That relationship, I think, is a lot better and can at least overcome that challenge that we're going to face here in Providence in a very short amount of time, is because that's going to be one solution to the housing crisis. Well, go out to Elmwood and let's buy up a bunch of those properties out there. And then, well, who gets the short end of that, you know, people here now. So
100%.
Yeah, it's definitely always something to be conscious of, you know, and especially as the city changes and hopefully, you know, comes into its own, you know, it's just have to be really considerate of everyone around, you know, and hopefully get through it together.
Yeah. Yep. Luke and I have faith in Providence. So many times we were like, we're getting older. Should we try out Portland, Oregon or somewhere else? Just while we're still young. And then we always come back to it, and we're like, no, for some reason, this city, it's so weird. It has a hold on us, and there's a creative grit to it. I think we want, although we explained earlier that there are all these, like, problems and things that would be nice to be fixed and red tape taken down, that grit that still is there and, like, being at the forefront of the change is really exciting. And it's a lot more exciting than being in a polished, ready-made place that has it all figured out. I think we're just all tortured artists or something in one way.
Yeah, there's like a similar moment when you bite into a Weenie Wizard dog, or if you're at a Lightning Bolt show or whatever it is, if you're watching Nick Mattiello read something into a, you know, off a teleprompter, whatever it is, there's a similar, it's like a bell that rings out and it kind of never really goes away, even if you can't hear it anymore. That grit's always in the work in Providence, I think.
I think it's so authentic. Too. Yeah, it is authentic. So hopefully everyone sticks around and we can make change together.
25 years, 25 minutes, whatever it is.
Yeah, we're here for the long haul.
As always, thanks for joining in on the Bartholomew Town podcast. Remember, brand new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. You can find every episode at BartholomewTown.com, RIPodcast.com, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.